I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is brought to you by 100 Bogart Street. Do you need a conference room for your next meeting? Learn more by visiting 100bogart.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. This week, we are in historic Filipino town in Los Angeles, sitting down with Keegan Fong, who, along with his mother and his sister and his family, started Woon as a family-run pop-up, which is now a brick-and-mortar serving up very delicious, very unique, very authentic Chinese food. We had a great conversation. We talked about the space, the journey to the restaurant, and everything that goes into working with your family. Then we dig deep into the archives to listen to Power Snap, a Brooklyn garage punk band by way of Tel Aviv. It was a really great performance. We had a lot of fun. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm with Keegan Fong, founder and owner of Woon in historic Filipino town?
Yeah.
Edge of Silver Lake.
Hi-Fi.
Hi-Fi.
Edge of Silver Lake, Echo Park, West Lake.
Yeah. This is more for when you're looking at like your Postmates caviar vibe, you know, how close the restaurant is to you ordering.
Totally. Yeah. We're that place now.
And you're born and raised LA out in Pasadena.
Yeah, I was born in Pasadena, raised out there. And then I had a little stint in San Diego because I went to college down there and stayed down there.
What's your fish taco place down there?
Fish tacos?
Or just tacos in general?
Dang, there's so many. I mean, the place that we used to frequent all the time was this... It's just so bad. It was my college spot, but this place called Sarah's.
Fair.
They're all names.
You know, it's funny when you talk about college spots or you look back on food before you sort of get a little bit more into it. You go, the memory's great, but I don't know if I want to go back and mess with that memory.
That's why I just started laughing, because I was like, why would I even mention this place? Because I would never go back. Yeah. But it's what sticks out in my mind.
Yeah. So growing up in Pasadena and in LA, Chinese food has really gone through some incredible changes in the last, I mean, really recently, but the last 5 years, 10 years. What have you seen growing up here?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because Pasadena is so close to San Gabriel Valley.
Yeah, which we love.
Yeah, and that's kind of, Chinese food to me has, you know, it's San Gabriel Valley. Mm-hmm. Like growing up, we would drive less than half a mile down to San Gabriel, Alhambra, Monterey Park, and that's just what I knew as Chinese food, which was kind of like its own little, to me it felt normal, but as I'm getting older, I've realized like that was a very rare thing.
It is very rare,
yeah,
to have that type of Chinese food, but also regionally specific, so much of China represented in one small part of America.
Yeah, it's insane. They have, it's pretty much, yeah, like you said, it's like all of China is in this little pocket. But yeah, I mean, for me personally, like the evolution of Chinese food in LA, it's weird because I feel like as I've gotten older, I think I've started to become more cognizant of it. Whereas before I was so ignorant to the fact that like all this was existent only there. And it wasn't until I moved to San Diego where I was like, oh, like this stuff doesn't exist elsewhere.
No.
And there was one little pocket in San Diego that I'd frequent by myself because I was, you know, I was in a predominantly like white college and no one wanted to go eat Chinese food with me. So I would go by myself. But it was like the shittiest Chinese food you could get. And
yeah. I mean, that idea of shitty Chinese food is pretty ubiquitous across America.
Yeah.
But you not only didn't have to deal with shitty Chinese food while eating out, but also at home. Your mom, who's sort of the inspiration, Mama Fong, for this restaurant and her recipes. What was it like growing up with that type of food coming out of your own kitchen at home?
Yeah, I mean, that's how she got the nickname Mama Fong. It was literally like throughout high school. My sister's 4 years older than me, so she kind of paved the way through high school for me. But it was her friends and my friends that would just come over every day and just ask my mom to make food. And my mom was always like the host where like if anyone came over, she's like, oh, do you want something to eat? And my friends would be stoned or like they'd be drunk and my mom would have no clue. And they're like, they'd just come over because they knew she'd make them food. And they'd be like, Mama Fong. And she'd be like, you want like a steak with like chimichurri or like you want noodles? You want like anything? And she'd make it for them. And
what type? She's from Shanghai?
She was born in Shanghai and then grew up in Hong Kong.
Got it. And did that influence the type of food that she made growing up in two different... Well, I mean, one's mainland China and then Hong Kong's its own place.
I mean, it definitely did because, I mean, this restaurant is pretty representative of that. It's mainly based out of, you know, Shanghainese food, but at the same time, there's a lot of Cantonese influence in there. There's a little bit of, like, Taiwanese influence in there, but...
And for those who don't know the difference, can you give a little bit of insight to the different regions and what type of food it is?
Yeah, so Shanghainese food, I would say, is mainly... Generally, it's, like, sweeter. Mm-hmm. It's a little heavier. Like, the noodles that we use are much thicker. It's a stir-fried noodle. There's a lot of, like, pork belly, so it's a lot of, like, braises that are on the sweeter side. Hong Kong is more, like, I guess the most relevant thing would be, like, dim sum. But there's also a lot of stuff, you know, like, stinky tofu and all that stuff. But I guess a good example is my mom doesn't like sugar, so she kind of tweaked her version of Shanghainese food to be less
sweet.
Less sweet.
Yeah.
And more on the savory side. she doesn't like using a lot of oil, so she keeps it a little cleaner. But our noodles are like a mix of like Shanghainese with a little bit of Taiwanese in there. But the pork belly is very Shanghainese, whereas like the fried tofu fish cakes are very like Cantonese inspired, because at dim sum you'll get those same things, but it's stuffed with pork instead of fish, and it's right. steamed, and she fries it because she knew that we liked it crispy when we were younger.
It's pretty amazing to have this unique perspective on this hugely diverse cuisine all being filtered through one person, and then having the wherewithal to recognize that it is special, because she even goes as far as using different types of ingredients that wouldn't, you know, you find a lot of regional cuisines where people are like, this is how we cook it.
Yeah.
And this is what the people want, especially customers, so this is how we do it. And your mom's like, no, it's postmodern.
Totally. And I think that has a lot, to do with the fact that my grandma actually didn't cook too much.
Hmm.
And she, when she did cook, it was stuff that my mom kept with her, like a chicken soup that is like amazing. It's like 7-ingredient chicken soup. Mm. But aside from that, my grandma, because when they moved to the States, she was so infatuated by the fact that like there's like ready to eat food. She became obsessed with like Marie Callender's chicken pot pies. So that was all my mom grew up with.
Got it.
And my mom was fed up with eating that stuff that she taught herself how to cook Shanghainese food.
What a reverse type of experience, because most of the times you hear people who are first generation come over and they're cooking traditional food, and then the second generation or their children are rejecting that for the peanut butter jelly sandwich because they feel ostracized, especially 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Totally. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, I was the opposite, right?
Like, what did you want?
I always wanted like Lunchables.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like my friends came with like pudding, fruit snacks and Lunchables. And I came with, my mom would make me the most, that's a whole nother subject. My mom would make me the most extravagant lunches. And to this day, I'm just like, God, I was such an asshole.
Oh my God. I remember when my mom was still making dinner and I was like, I just want pizza. And now if I could have those, you know, European inspired 3-course dinners every night that my mom made.
Yeah.
What was a typical lunch from your mom?
The one that stands out the most is she would make me these like caprese sandwiches with like a balsamic glaze.
Mm. Not all Chinese food.
Not all Chinese food. She cooks amazing food all around, but and I would like bring that to school and it'd be like tied. She was so ahead of her time. It'd be tied with like twine and wax paper. And everyone would be like, what the hell are you eating, dude? And they're just like eating Lunchables. But my good friend who actually works here, she actually caught on and was like, this is amazing. And I asked her to a high school dance with a sandwich because of that. So in the end it worked out, but I mean, like, and then there'd be the stinky Chinese food, like, you know, she'd cook, like, fried rice, and I would think it would, like, smell bad.
What I would give now for fried rice at lunch.
I know. It's, right? Like, the most comforting thing ever.
So I want to jump ahead a little bit. So you're sort of back, you're in San Diego, you sort of realize that your mom's food is something special, you're working in marketing, you're with surf stuff and streetwear. When did the idea of food start to creep in as a business?
When I was in college, early in college, my sister and I were like loosely, she's in fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And I was obviously interested in that world too, but we always had this idea of like, we should own a business together.
Mm.
Like, we always had this thing in our mind. We even came up with a name for it. I won't say it because it's really embarrassing.
But just the idea of a business. We should own something.
We're like, the most ideal thing was like, what if we had this place where you could like sell clothes and like records and there'd be like a kitchen with a little noodle bar and like mom could serve her noodles.
And be heavily curated.
That's like everyone's dream.
Yeah.
And that I actually built like a deck for that for a long time. And then that always stuck with me, like, dude, like, my mom's food, like, that sounds like a great business. She's always wanted a restaurant.
That's, like, the unique selling point, right?
It's the unique, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's the unique selling point. And And I think as time went on, I just like missed her food so much down there. I was like, man, there's like San Diego's kind of missing this. Like,
yeah.
Like there's a huge opportunity. And I was like, as time went on and I graduated and I was working my other jobs, I just, it felt passionate to be able to have something for myself. So I would work on a business plan, a very loose business plan for a restaurant that featured my mom's recipes.
And when did you run it by her? And when you ran it by her, did she think that you were crazy that people would want pay money for her food?
Yeah, that's funny. I think the first time I ran it by her was my uncle was hosting. He's from LA. He has a antique business in LA. It's called JF Chen. And he was hosting a craft fair called Parachute Market.
Mm-hmm.
And my cousin Bianca was curating the vendors for it. And she got Gorilla Tacos at that time.
Shout out.
I had no clue who Gorilla Tacos was. And she's like, yeah, we got this truck. It's called Gorilla Tacos, but I think we're going to need more food. And at that moment, I was like,
we'll do
like,
it.
Let us do it. We had like 30 days and I hit up my mom and she's like, what? Huh? Like what? No, I can't do that. And then I hit up my sister and my brother-in-law who's from Austria. I was like, are you guys down to like try and figure this out? They're like, yeah, fuck it. Let's do it. So we literally, I remember meeting at my mom's house around the dining room table and I just had this like long checklist of what we would need to do. And we kind of just like delegated and like got it done.
How close was that checklist of what you thought you needed to do versus the reality of what you actually needed to do? 60%, 80%, 90%?
Honestly, I think it was it was like 90%.
That's pretty good.
Because it was very detailed, like down to like create the logo, like create aprons. My sister got the aprons custom made from her coworker.
Amazing.
And like the logo was like embroidered on there. Like
it feels very real. You get an apron with a logo on it. People are like, oh, so what else have you done? You're like, this is our first time.
Exactly. And what's funny is like people were so, you know, they were so taken aback by that. And I was like, oh, I thought this is what everyone did.
Amazing. Well, we're going to take a quick musical break. We're going to talk about the early days and then the journey to opening up your first brick and mortar. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thank you. I'm done. This is my song to break the spell. I'll sing it so loud. They hear me down in hell. It's the one that forgives me for the lies that I've spilled. 'Cause chances are taken if songs can't. To have even stranger when I'm done here, still a stranger after this song, except I'm stranger, it's just hard to tell, he's hard to approach. Is he sad or is he fun? It's even stranger when I'm done. Stranger when I'm done here. Stranger, oh, when I'm done here.
Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm here with Keegan Fong, founder and owner of Woon. So before the break, you were telling us about that first event, and was it after the first event or was it a little bit longer when you realized that you had, if not a brick and mortar restaurant business plan, but something viable as like a food pop-up, something unique?
Yeah, I think it was during that first event. Everyone was so responsive to it. It was a two-day event. I remember the first day we sold out by like, it was like 3 p.m. or something. And we were there from like noon till dinner time. And that's when we were like, oh man, like people actually are responding to this. So then my mom and I like ran to the market and grabbed a bunch more ingredients. And the next day we sold out again a little later. But I think after that first event, we had a little bit of incoming from people that were there, like, hey, can you do this event for us? That's when we were kind of like, oh, like we created a little demand. And I remember the following week we did an event in San Diego. And then after that, we started kind of gaining momentum from there. But we were all working full time. So
that's tough.
That thought was still pretty far away, but it was just, you know, it gave us a little bit of confidence. And the fact that, like, oh, like, if we were to do this seriously, I think we'd be able to create some type of following.
And how are people responding to this type of Chinese food? Because if you've never had real Chinese food, never gone to SGV, do people go, what is this? This isn't the Chinese food that I know, or I didn't know that Chinese food could be like this?
Yeah, that's another interesting one, because I think the type of noodles that we serve, a lot of people do those noodles. And I think the difference between us and them is most people don't make that the forefront of their menu. They're always focusing on some other type of noodle, beef noodle soup, or like, some type of Sichuan, like spicy noodle, or it's not like just this very comforting bowl of pretty simple, but at the same time, kind of complex bowl of noodles. And I think that's what was unique about us is that we put this, like, usually this dish that's usually on the back burner of the menu kind of as the forefront.
Interesting.
And I think that's where people were like, oh, I didn't know that this type of style could taste like this.
I mean, how much education did you have to do?
For the customers?
Mm-hmm. Like, how much did you have to be telling them that what you may think of this type of cuisine is a very small, specific type of this, and this is a giant, diverse, ethnically rich type of food, and that there are other offerings, and there's other ways to approach it, and there are things that you may have never known about that you absolutely love. Like, it can be the most comforting, soul-warming, rich food to the most aggressively heated, tear-you-up type of cuisine, and everything in between.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, I think for us, we were just kind of doing our thing, and, like, we were just making these noodles, and they kind of, like, they're kind of, like, self-explanatory. I mean, once you have them, the texture and everything about it is just, like, it comes together very easily. And I think that was the first thing, is, like, people are, these are good. They didn't care where they came from.
Right.
Or what they're, you know, what
they
represent.
You're like, my mom's from Shanghai. She's from Hong Kong. We live in SGV. And they're like, no, no, it tastes good. I'm good. It's okay.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
And that's fine.
That's fine.
Honestly, that was the main thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at my business plan now, it's like, food that tastes good, like, everything else kind of comes after it.
If you want to dig deeper to the story, there's such a rich history there, but if you just want to come in and get the noodles and the beef,
exactly,
come at you.
Yeah.
So you got more popularity, but you all have full-time jobs. When did you start thinking about cutting the safety net of having a job, but then also investing in a restaurant? What was that mentality? When did you finally feel that you had enough support or you could take that leap of faith?
Yeah, so we were doing pop-ups for, it was like either every month or every other month. Like, my sister had a baby during this time, so it was like hard to get everyone together, but we were doing it. I was trying to stay relevant, and it ended up being like 4 years of that.
Yeah.
But it was probably like year three where I was like, it's either like, it's do or die now. Like, I make something of this, or I just forget about it, because we're not making money on it. We're like, we're paying ourselves a little bit.
It's an art project.
It's an art project.
It's a delicious one, but it's an art project.
Exactly. It's an art project that is very labor intensive.
Yeah.
And it all fell on me too. I was driving to LA, loading in, loading out, prepping all day with my mom. And I could tell, like, we'd all be really stressed, but it would be really rewarding after the event. But at that point I was like, it's do or die. And honestly, the job I was at that moment was really helpful in the sense that, like, I helped build a pretty big business from the ground up. And I was able to be a part of that and able to learn from it. And I felt like I wanted to learn as much as I could there. And then I would be ready to kind of start my own thing.
Like, learn what it means to start a business without your own money. It's true, though. I mean, there's a lot of pratfalls that come with starting any business, whether it's a restaurant or an antique store or, importing coffee beans, that you can learn and then apply to your own business.
Totally.
That is a lot less risk averse.
No, you're right. And I mean, although it was a complete opposite industry that I was in, you know, obviously there's still the main foundations that I could take from it.
And you also have a background in, as you mentioned, in marketing and things like that. So what did you apply from that into creating the brand, creating Woon, you know, because it is a very different type of Chinese food restaurant. While at the same time being also very authentic Chinese food. It's not like a, I don't know, you could say a hipster version if you don't want to really dig in, but like it's authentic food, but a new, fresh look.
Yeah, I mean, aside from everything you can learn, like, physically, like social media,
or sure,
like digital marketing, digital strategy, aside from that stuff where I was, I think the main piece that I took out of it was, like, I was marketing this story that I was essentially creating stories for this brand to market that I wasn't fully invested in. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I started to realize, like, I think the biggest takeaway was I wanted to get into marketing something I was passionate about.
Right.
And telling a real story. And that's what Woon is. So that was the biggest takeaway, is like, just tell it how it is. Like, this is how I grew up. This place is representative of my mom's house and my own. It's literally just like a mixture of her house and mine. Like, the furniture and everything is very similar to the space I live in. And then, you know, like, these cabinets, the pictures on the wall are literally taken from my mom's house.
I mean, for those who can't see, it's this gorgeous, minimal wood, very clean, refined design, table, chairs, things like that.
Yeah, and I think I wanted it to feel like home, and this is like...
It feels very homey. And it's also the size of the space and the open kitchen, yeah, and things like that. Very much where you're walking in to someone's house,
yeah,
in many ways.
That means a lot.
And it's an authentic... I mean, you know, that word authenticity gets thrown around so much, but you actually do have an authentic story because it's coming directly from your grandma to your mom to you and your sister and your family.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, this is... Yeah. And I think that's the takeaway that I got, was like, I don't want to do anything that's not authentic to me.
Now, do people come in and, because they haven't had this type of Chinese food, say, oh, this is an authentic Chinese food?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
How do you deal with that?
It freaking drives me nuts. I mean, like, if I go on Yelp and I get certain reviews, or I read certain reviews, It that's like one of the things that ticks me off.
It's tough, right? Because you could go at them and be like, you have not done your research, and you don't really know that this is my mom's food and she's from China. Or you can be like, no, I'm a business owner, and they're going to eat what they're going to eat, and they're probably not going to come here anyway because this is not the type of food they're looking for.
I kind of have both perspectives. Like, when I first opened this business, I replied to every single Yelp review.
Of course.
Up until number 50. And if you read number 50, it's one of those comments, and I went off on the guy. I left about like 3 paragraphs, and I was like, okay, that's the last one I'm ever going to do. And if anyone says the same thing, like, I'll just refer back to that one and say, I already said what I needed to say.
See Yelp review 50.
Yeah.
In a perfect world, what do you want people to take away from their experience at Wound?
Honestly, I just want them to, like, feel I've always said this, like, I want them to feel like they are a guest in our home. And that's so cheesy to say, but to be honest, it's like, that's how my friends always felt at my mom's house. And it's just like, regardless of, you know, I don't know, regardless of the space or whatever, like, I just want people to feel like they can be who they are here. They can do whatever they want. They can, you know, I think our staff is very, like, welcoming and not overbearing, and I think that's representative of that because that's how my mom was. But that's kind of our main motto, is, like, just welcome everyone like it's their home. And the food is, it's almost like, you know, the food is the food. It's always going to be there, and I think what people should, like, they'll know what to expect, I guess, is, like, they're going to get comforting Chinese food. And I think the experience is, like, kind of a bonus for that, like, the atmosphere and our servers and the drinks we offer kind of enhances that whole experience.
You know, having a place like this and being, would you consider yourself second generation?
Yeah.
What inspiration do you hope that other people who are second generation Americans can take away from, like, a place like this? Because if you don't want to use the word authentic, the food here and the is pulling from a set specific inspiration and has a clear point of view. What do you hope that other people who come from your generation can take away from Moon and apply to their own lives, whether it's food, clothing, art, something like that, if they want to start their own business?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I've been inspired by a lot of other second generation people. And for me, it's like, this is a way to, like, pay homage to my family, my mom, and where she came from. And I think people can do that in a lot of different ways, whether it's a clothing brand or whatever. My friend Chelsea, good friend Chelsea growing up, she started a clothing line, and it's very representative of, like, China and what's the contemporary fashion design, which is amazing. And I think that's inspiring to me. Like, being able to see other people doing that, because it's, I don't know. I think it's becoming more common now, but it was rare. You know, it was very rare. Like, most second generation want to fit in and, like, kind of become part of the mold. But you can, I think you can kind of do that, but also kind of nod your past and history. And that's what I've kind of been trying to do, is make it relevant, but also make it traditional at the same time.
Of course. I'd be remiss to not mention that Chinese food restaurants have been in the news a lot recently because of coronavirus and things like that. And I don't know if that's affected you or anything like that, but how do you feel, and if not just coronavirus, but when other things from other parts of the world can get in the news and things like that, like, what is the important way to really approach that and to support the local community when there's a global event that maybe has people not quite understanding the situation?
Yeah, that one's been weird. I mean, there's obviously, like, a lot of stuff in the media, like, oh, like, you know, like, xenophobia and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty complex. Like, for us, directly, like, thankfully, and we haven't been affected by that whole thing very much. Like, we've actually been very busy. I think it does have to do with where we're located and the kind of, I guess, the kind of persona we put off. Like, people might think this is, like, oh, it's white Chinese food, so it's safe.
But it's so authentic Chinese food.
Which is really funny.
Probably another Yelp review. Maybe maybe you go back in.
Totally. Yeah, that's Yelp review number 50, actually. But what's funny, yeah, I've been talking to a lot of other people, and they've been affected by it.
Yeah.
A lot, especially in San Gabriel Valley, which is unfortunate. I don't know. I mean, I think there's obviously the media is playing this huge thing. It's kind of crazy. These guys next door, this building next door, they're an industrial supply company.
Yeah.
They provide things like our gloves in the back of the house, surgical masks, all that stuff. There's people knocking on their door and offering like $1,000 for a case of N95 masks, which is
nuts.
Insane. And do they need it right here? I don't think they do, but maybe they're selling it on the black market.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, my opinion is that I think the media is kind of talking this thing up, and it's unfortunately affecting a lot of Chinese businesses, which I think is crazy, and it shouldn't be that way. And we've been affected by it. We got a couple events canceled, and they literally replied saying, oh, I canceled this. Like, I was getting their catering order prepped on a Thursday for a Friday event. I followed up with them on Thursday. Hey, just want to make sure this is still going on. They replied, oh, haha, like, I canceled the event because of the coronavirus. Laugh out loud. And I just read that, and I was like,
thanks. What?
And I, yeah.
It's like, that's not really how it works, but sure.
Yeah. But that's the extent of which I've been affected by it. And luckily, we haven't been too affected by it.
But go to SGV. Support.
Yeah, 100% go to SGV. My buddy Christian, he has a new restaurant called Yang's Kitchen. He's killing it
out
there.
Shout out. Alhambra, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I don't think he needs the help. Like, he's getting a lot of business. But when I was there, a couple weeks ago, it was, like, in the middle of that thing, and when I talked to his girlfriend, Maggie, who's the GM there, she had mentioned that business was a lot slower. And it's unfortunate because it's crazy. Like, I just don't understand. Like, that we're a world away. I can see why people get scared, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know, man. It's like...
It's tough because, you know, it's Chinese restaurants now, but it could be... you know, Spanish restaurants, it could be French restaurants, you know, when you just go blindly into those sort of writing off a whole culture because of something, it leads to bad things.
Well, it's like, are we importing our produce from China? No. Like, and I think people think that.
Like, or they think that, like, the delivery guy was in Wuhan a week ago and now he's writing their food. It's like, guys, that's not really how it works.
Yeah.
If you also study, like, travel patterns, immigration policy, things like that. But, you know, it's just sometimes it's easier just to write off a whole culture
it
and
is.
Be safe.
that.
Despite how much that might hurt or affect people.
Totally. I mean, my wok chef, I mean, he's from Vietnam. I don't think he's ever been to China. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he looks, he speaks Chinese, he looks Chinese, so people think, oh, like, he might have just gotten off a plane from China. I don't know, it's pretty,
yeah.
It's interesting.
Well, listen, thank you so much. Thanks for sharing your food with us. If you haven't been to Woon, it is delicious. If people want to find you online or come and visit or get some of the good merch, where can they go?
WoonKitchen.com and WoonKitchen on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Darren. That was fun.
Shout out to your mom, too, for all the recipes.
Yeah. she's taking care of her grandkids right now while my sister's out of the country. So
hey, family first.
Make it. Yeah. Totally.
So we have another song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by 100 Bogart, a new building in Bushwick, Brooklyn that provides offices, co-working, event spaces, and a brand new podcast recording room. Have you been dreaming of starting your very own podcast in Brooklyn? You can now rent space in 100 Bogart's custom-built podcast room to record interviews, voiceover, and commentary. The room is fitted out with two microphones, mixing board, and a MacBook Pro running Pro Tools. You can rent the space by the hour, and a rental of an hour or more includes a 100 Bogart co-working pass. That means complimentary coffee, tea, and access to your own desk for the rest of the day. So what are you waiting for? Get started on your next audio project. 100 Bogart has the space and amenities you need to kickstart your podcast. Learn more at 100bogart.com or call their team at 718-362-3539.
Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm here with Power Snap live in studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, Paul, you're gonna have to shout since you're all the way back
all
there.
Right.
Hi. Paul on drums.
Romy on guitar.
And vocals. Or both vocals.
Yeah, she's like the lead vocals. Okay. And I'm doing some background things. I'm Noga.
Noga. So you're from Tel Aviv, or two of you are from Tel Aviv.
Oui. I'm from actually Ramat Gan. It's like a city next to Tel Aviv.
Fair enough. How far out?
Like 10 minutes drive.
Give it respect. Give it respect. Walking?
Walking, it's like, depends 40. To which part. But
you,
it's walk, like,
you walked it
yeah,
a few times.
Yeah, it can
times.
Be like a 40-minute, an hour maybe.
Okay. Growing up, what was the rock scene like in Tel Aviv? And what were your influences?
Small. Rock scene is small. Noga barely knows any Israeli music.
It's because my parents... No, I do know, like, but just...
From the 60s.
Israeli music in what sense? Like, traditional Israeli music? Like, contemporary pop Israeli music? Or...
Oh, that's like neither of us.
Oh, okay.
I mean, maybe a little bit. There's... there's not a lot to talk about with contemporary Israeli music, I think.
Growing up, how did you get into this? Or what were your influences? Or where from around the world influenced the music that you play and got into?
Well, me, Romy, my dad is a musician.
What does he play?
He plays guitar and sings.
Okay. What type of music?
Rock.
Okay. I can primary so, source.
Yeah. And Noga's dad is a musician too.
Yeah, he plays bass and guitar, and he plays like rock and blues and stuff.
And
like
were
that.
They in? Did they do their original music, cover bands? What type of? Where did they play around town?
My dad had and still has a long career of like his songs and music.
What is it? Does he perform under his name, or what is it? A band, or
no? His name is Shalom Chanoch.
And what is his? And he plays around Israel, or what is his reception and audience?
He plays a lot in Israel. He comes. He tours the U.S. every like couple of years. He's like a very big name, so he's like one of the reasons it was hard for me to like stay in that small little country.
Because there was personally. Because there was no way it wasn't gonna be like a daughter of
exactly.
Right. So how did he influence you, and then how were you able to kind of define your own voice away from dad in the early days?
Well, I just grew up around music, and then I went to like an art high school, to the jazz department, where I met Nogi.
Yeah, friends from high school.
And since I was 12 and got to know Green Day, I wanted to start a band and move to the U.S. So when I met Nogi, she was a pianist, and one day I got her to play bass, and then I was like, hey, we should do a band together.
Did you make a playlist since the rock scene was small? I mean, normally in the States, you'd be like, we want to be like, and you list, you know, the wide, diverse range of influence that you could have from anywhere in the States. Where were you pulling from? And when you say rock music, who, you know, who did you give as, you know, you used to have flyers like in the city, if you play this and these are your influences, we're looking for a bass player. Did you make a playlist? Did you like pass her some vinyl, some mixtapes, some
to her?
Yeah.
No, because she loves the Beatles and that's all you need.
And so what were your early shows like before you came? How long were you in a band, and was it always Power Snap and then you came here, or were you a different band and then when you moved here you reformed as Power Snap?
So it started just from the both of us. We were playing like bass and guitar
like
in small
at cafes.
Yeah.
In Tel Aviv.
Yeah. In Tel Aviv. When we started, when we were like 16 or 17. Mm-hmm. And then
16,
right. And then what happened? I don't remember. We met like a couple, your cousin and his friend.
No, and then I was like, okay, I'm moving to New York, but I want to record some of my original songs. So when I move to New York and try to find a band, people know what my style is. Mm-hmm. So
and that was when you were like 17 or 16.
Never
mind. When
Something
you were like younger than today.
Yeah, earlier than today.
Yeah, earlier than today. And then I took Noga and I took my nephew, who's almost my age, and a couple of his friends, and we recorded like 3 songs. And then I got here and I was like, wait, I have a band in Israel, so I'm going to go back.
So did you go back and drag Noga by the hair, or get on your knees and beg her to come, or how did you end up?
No, I was like, yeah, I'm totally down to like try to move to a different country.
It took a few years though, because I came back when I was like 17.
Yeah,
and
I wasn't ready to move.
Yeah, you
I was
ready.
I wanted to do like other stuff.
And then she met her boyfriend, who's also a musician, and then his bandmates from Israel moved to New York.
Easy
and then
decision.
He wanted to too.
No, it started from me.
Started
I was like,
me.
Yeah. Like,
but I mean, it started from me.
It started from you, and then it was me, and then I talked to him about it, and then it's. I think it's boring.
I think it's good though, just because you know, you just came with a couple of guitars, bass, and a dream. And what was it about hearing Green Day and being at the age of 12? Like, why did you want to come and make and release music in the States? What was the appeal?
I don't even know. I just remember seeing American Idiot, and I was like, oh, what is this? I want it and also to be it.
And just something spoke to you about it. There was no something indefinable.
Something, it felt like very rebellious and very like, very emotional, even though it's like so angsty, you know? Like very... Yeah, it's angsty. And I was like a
Angsty teen.
Angsty teen, exactly.
And given the, you know, the two different cities that you've existed in, Tel Aviv and New York, what would you say are some of the differences in people's reception to having the dream of being a musician, or the opportunities or the availability, or New York versus Tel Aviv, and being like, I'm a musician, I want to be a rock and roller. How is it received?
Well, personally, I do feel some kind of like wearing out here, like getting worn out, because there's so much music and so many people. Even though in Israel, like in Tel Aviv, also every single person I know is an artist. Mm. But here, yeah, like all the music, it's kind of like too much sometimes. But also, I found here a community that really, like, when I fall, they lift me up. And I have Nogi and I have Paul, and we're together, you know. We help each other out. And that's something that was harder in Tel Aviv for some reason.
Can we hear a song?
Yeah.
What are you going to play for us first?
So this is actually a song that started... we did have a band in Israel, and we used to call it Bar Vase, like a bar and a vase, but it's actually a mutation of the word barvaz, which means duck in Hebrew, and I really like ducks.
As you just waved your duck tattoo at me.
Yes, this is the radio, so it's good that you explained that.
Yeah. So here we go, Power Snap Live on Snacky Tunes.
Yes. One, two, three.
You mentioned finding community here. I'm guessing it's the King Pizza world.
Yes.
Who's been so great to us and has sent us so many, 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 many wonderful bands.
We love them.
Yeah, we love them too. How did you find them and what spoke to them that pulled you in and made you feel safe, secure, warm, loved?
So this is actually a really funny story. Now, it's even funnier. Because, so I moved here. We moved here together.
What year was that?
October 2016.
Okay.
We moved just for the winter, like just for like the roughest time of the year, just in time. And I was going, like trying to go to a lot of shows by myself, which I've never done before in Israel, but here I didn't know anyone, and Nogi was busy with her boyfriend. So, and with like hating winter. So I went to shows, like Googled, found Umay Rockness, went to shows, blah, 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 Alphaville, all those places. Then one day I saw there was this band called Ghost King. They were playing at Alphaville. I went to see them, and Nogi joined me for, like, the first time. And I loved them. And after the show, I was coming up to the lead singer to tell him that I loved the show. And this other guy came up to him first, this bearded guy, who was asking the lead singer about booking a show, booking his band somewhere. And I heard, it was, like, right when, like, a month after we started Power Snap, before Paul is like, we had one drummer before him who was Israeli, and then we were like, no, we need a local.
Jersey boy.
Joyzy. Anyway, so I later on spoke to that bearded guy whose name is Greg. I was like, hey, I have a show. Yeah, book me. I was very nervous. That was the first time I saw Greg. And I heard about this, the Mad Doctors, this band, and they were having their, vinyl release a month later. So I went to that, and that was one of the most amazing shows I've been at in New York and ever. It was the first mosh pit I've been in the city, and everything was just so, like, loving and beautiful, and all the bands were amazing. And what's so funny about it, not only that we're in the King Pizza family now, is that Nogi plays bass for Ghost King.
Full circle.
Yeah.
And then some.
And then some.
Can we hear another song?
Sure.
What are you going to play for us?
We're going to play our song Chemistry from our EP that we released via King Pizza in the summer. The EP is named Delatency, and you can still get cassettes if you are cool and have a cassette player.
If you so desire. Before you play, the video is very good.
Have you seen it?
Yes, I've Yay! Seen it. We encourage everyone to check it out. Who directed it, and what was the idea behind it? And who are all the people that are in it? Because there's more than three of you.
Right. Paul wasn't there because of his time.
What the hell?
But by the time that we released the video, Paul was already the drummer, so great. That was kind of funny. Throwing his stick in the air in triumph. Directed and shot and edited it was were Gal Shaya and Efrat Kariv, two of our very dear Israeli friends, and a couple other or three other of our friends were in it as my obstacles to get into the thing that I desire, that in the end is my demise.
I mean, well said.
Thank you.
All right, let's hear the song.
Yeah? Okay.
Radioactive visor to stare.
ocean and I fall.
Your EP came out earlier this year, Delatency?
Delatency.
Delatency.
Like delay and latency.
A new word.
Yes.
A new word. Where did
Greg, our friend from King Pizza, was like, before we released it, he was like, just making sure. You know it's not a real word, right?
They're like, it's not like some like Israeli translation where like, no, we're pretty sure it's a word. Or it's like, is this an Israeli word that we don't? Is this some Hebrew that we don't know? It's like, no, it's just a made up word.
No.
Where does it come from?
Delay and latency, because, you know, just everything's like always late, you know, like this EP took like 2 years to make, like those 3.5 songs. I felt like we moved here a little too late. We were always late when we like scheduled stuff with Paul. When we recorded the album, there was a lot of latency issues that we needed to solve.
You said 3.5 songs?
Yeah.
What's the half song?
Miscellaneous.
How is this song a half song?
Well, I encourage you. Right? What?
It's like a mashup.
It's like, yeah, it's like a medley.
Okay.
Of like
interlude.
Weird demo thingies with some like skit bits. And yeah, I highly. We're on Spotify actually as of like yesterday or something. Yay! And yeah, please go listen to Delatency and tell us what you think about Miscellaneous. Was it stupid? Maybe.
Maybe. Probably not. Ha. Probably not. If you could message back to 12-year-old you who was into American Idiot and just had a dream of releasing music in the States, now that you've done it, what would you say to her and how do you feel about her currently?
Oh my God, I actually had a talk with her like, like a few weeks before my 24th birthday. And it was very emotional.
Tell us, set the stage for us.
I got super stoned and like, I looked in the mirror and the eyes they were looking, it was like my image, but the eyes they were looking back was me when I'm like 14, like 10 years ago. And I was like, look where I am. Look where you are. And she was like, oh my God, this is awesome.
And then how does 24-year-old you feel about it now that you've done it? This disregarding the fact that you moved here too late and everything's late.
Yeah, I'm still not satisfied.
Still not satisfied. Why is that?
Because I want us to play in front of like 5,000 people, not 15 people. So come to our shows, help us.
I want to make sure we have time for one more song, but you're already on Spotify, but where can people find you, follow you, come to your shows, get yes. all the information?
When is this thing gonna be on?
Tomorrow.
Awesome. So come to our show in a few days on the 29th at Our Wicked Lady. It's Thursdays for the Cause, which means that all proceeds from the door and 10% of proceeds from the bar goes to each month they pick a different charity. This month it's for this union to help voting rights something. So that is cool. That is good. You should come. There's going to be special guests maybe. And then also we're playing a show on December 9th with our dear, dear friends, Top Nachos, the band with the coolest name in the world.
Great name.
And, yeah, we're on Spotify and stuff now. And probably Apple Music, hopefully. I don't know. I'll check. You can buy our album on Bandcamp. You can buy the cassette on Bandcamp, too. And if you want a sick, super, super, duper soft t-shirt with, like, double-sided one with stuff on the back and on the front.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Wow.
All sizes, either blue or white, come to one of our shows or, like, private message us or something like that.
Perfect. Well, we want to thank Sherry Bear for coming on and congratulations on your 15-year anniversary. Power Snap, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you, Greg.
We will be back next week with an all-new episode of Snacky Tunes. What are you going to take us out with?
Pusher.
Pusher.
Pusher. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
One, two, three, four. How much do I have to push you? How much do I have to clean up? Walk inside. Noble or in the mind, be cool man, or to take arms against, careless with love. Hey now, hey now, hey now. Freedom runs in now. I think I'm a first of favor. You can get to a first of favor.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money.
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos.
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.